Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, January 25th. Midland unemployment ends 2023 at 2.1%. The story was written by Mellon McEwen, oil editor. Midland's labor market outshone the rest of the Lone Star State throughout 2023, and the final month of the year showed that strength had not dimmed. The Texas Workforce Commission reported December unemployment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, or MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, dropped to 2.1% in December from 2.2% in November and down from 2.3% in December 2022. Midland had the lowest unemployment among the state's MSAs, followed by Amarillo with 2.5%, College Station Bryan with 2.6%, and Lubbock with 2.8%. Odessa was tied with Abilene and San Angelo at 2.9%. Quote, "It's unbelievable Midland is the top MSA. That's phenomenal," Willie Taylor, Chief Executive Officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin office. "The market is stable, and from all indications, we're rocking and rolling," end quote. Midland saw its civilian labor force decline to 115,000 from 116,000 in November, and the number of employed dropped to 113,000 from 114,000 in November. Taylor attributed that decline to seasonal trends, saying he noticed similar declines both statewide and nationally. Quote, "We are definitely at full employment," he said in a telephone interview. He went on to add that the final quarter of a year usually brings layoffs, but there weren't many seen this time, indicating industries were keeping their workforces. Quote, "That tells you how tight the labor market is," he said. There is growth in school districts' career and technical programs and at the local community college, Taylor said. There also continues to be need for skilled workers from education to transportation, truck drivers to law enforcement, and more. Quote, "There's a lot of growth," he said. While Midland's labor force declined from November to December, it has grown by almost 4,000 from last December. And while the number of employed also fell, that number has also risen by almost 4,000 from December 2022. Midland's total non-farm job count fell by 100 to 122,600 from 122,700 in November, led by a 300-job loss in Midland's dominant mining, logging, and construction sectors. The leisure and hospitality sector shed 100 jobs from November to December. The trade, transportation, and utilities sector was the only one to gain jobs, adding 300 during the month. For the 12 months from December 2022 to December 2023, Midland has added 4,300 jobs for a 3.6% growth rate, down slightly from 3.7% in November. Mining, logging, and construction led with 1,900 new jobs, followed by the government sector with 1,000 new jobs. Trade, transportation, and utilities gained 800 jobs over the year. Private education and health services and the other services sector each added 300 jobs. The manufacturing sector and financial activity sector added 100 jobs each. The only sector to lose jobs over the year was professional and business services, down 200 jobs over the year. Statewide, the unemployment rate was 4%, down from 4.1% in November. The state broke employment growth and civilian labor force records in 2023. The state's seasonally adjusted job count reached 14,103,000 jobs, an increase of 19,100 jobs over the month, marking 27 consecutive months of new series employment highs. The growth rate from December 2022 to December 2023 was 2.7%, compared to 1.7% nationally. The seasonally adjusted civilian labor force grew over the month by 11,100 people to reach 15,203,000 in December. This marked a 12th consecutive monthly increase and included the addition of 18,400 Texans employed. While Midland had the lowest unemployment, the highest was in McAllen-Edinburgh Mission at 5.8%. Part-time vet joins Midland Animal Services. The story was written by B.K. Richter. Midland Animal Services has found a part-time veterinarian. Animal Services Director Melissa Griffin Hobson announced during an Animal Services Advisory Commission that a hire has taken place and that the person will begin in the next few weeks. Plans for the new veterinarian include working on Thursdays and Saturdays and focusing on spaying and neutering any animal that is adopted. Griffin Hobson added the person will take care of sick animals at the Midland Animal Shelter, so, quote, "we try to treat versus euthanize," end quote. City of Midland officials are still hoping to hire a full-time veterinarian and have yet to announce the name of the part-time vet. During a phone interview, Griffin Hobson said that the cold weather has brought in a large influx of animals into the Midland facility. Quote, "we definitely see more dogs right now, and additionally, we have a huge influx of puppies as well," she said. Quote, "there are people that have brought in mother dogs and their puppies after finding them, but that's typically what happens with the cold weather," end quote. She also said that part of hiring a veterinarian will improve results leading to adoptions, with animals being spayed or neutered before their adoption. With donations to the local animal shelter, Griffin Hobson said that all donations are utilized to help people directly within the community. Quote, "we can use these resources to mend a fence or even to build a doghouse for residents," she added. Spay and neuter vouchers for local veterinarians are offered as part of the services for Midland residents. Billionaires fund new PAC to back conservatives. The story was written by Patrick Sveit of the Texas Tribune. Texas's most prolific far-right donors have reloaded in the wake of scandal and with a bruising primary on the horizon. A campaign finance report posted Wednesday showed that West Texas oil billionaires Tim Dunn and Ferris Wilkes have poured $2 million into a new group, Texans United for a Conservative Majority, that has started spending against Texas House Republicans. The group is a spinoff of Defend Texas Liberty, the political action committee that came under fire in October after the Texas Tribune reported that its then-president, Jonathan Strickland, hosted notorious white supremacist and Adolf Hitler admirer Nick Fuentes for nearly 7 hours. Defend Texas Liberty, which has vowed to go after House Republicans who voted to impeach Attorney General Ken Paxton, curtailed its political giving after the scandal, disclosing only one candidate contribution through December 31st. But Texans United for a Conservative Majority popped up in December and had to meet a reporting deadline of Tuesday because it is involved in a special election next week. It filed the report a day late. Its report, as well as another report it filed late, showed its only donors through Saturday were a firm tied to Dunn called Hexagon Partners and Wilkes. The firm gave $700,000, while Wilkes gave $1.3 million. The PAC reported over $400,000 in candidate contributions, mostly to primary challengers from January 1st to January 20th. The biggest recipients, at $100,000 each, were David Covey, who is running against House Speaker Dade Phelan, a Republican from Beaumont, and Andy Hopper, who is taking on Representative Lynn Stuckey, a Republican from Denton. Phelan is a top target of the PAC after overseeing Paxton's impeachment, and Stuckey is in a rematch against Hopper after defeating him by a razor-thin margin last primary. The report marks the first time that almost all the candidate donations stemming from the beginning of January were disclosed. Texans United for a Conservative Majority was required to file the report because it is working in the January 30th special election runoff to replace former Representative Brian Slayton, a Republican from Roy City, who was expelled for providing alcohol to an intern and having sex with her. The PAC is supporting Brent Money over Jill Dutton in that intra-party battle. The Fuentes scandal drew fierce denunciations from Phelan and his allies. The firestorm only grew in the following weeks as the Tribune uncovered other links between Defend Texas Liberty and avowed anti-Semites or racists. And some question whether Dunn and Wilkes would recede from the political scene amid the unwelcome attention to their political activities. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said he spoke with Dunn at the time, and Dunn told him, quote, unequivocally, that it was a serious blunder for PAC President Jonathan Strickland to meet with white supremacist Nick Fuentes, end quote. Patrick had gotten $3 million in campaign funding from Defend Texas Liberty as he was preparing to preside over Paxton's impeachment trial last year. Amid the fallout from Fuentes' scandal, Patrick announced he was putting $6 million of his campaign funds into Israeli bonds. The Texas Tribune is a member-supported, nonpartisan newsroom informing and engaging Texans on state politics and policy. Learn more at texastribune.org. Small bites. Heaven in a cup. Indulge your sweet cravings with Love at First Bites treats. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Tucked in the right corner behind Fujiyama hangs a bright turquoise-colored awning. Underneath, two black doors lead into sweet treat heaven. Known as Love at First Bite, the new bakery opened in the courtyard at Midland Park Shopping Center at the beginning of the year. For the last year, owners Vianney and Richard Schumann have been converting the former Bless This Mess boutique into a suitable spot for their beloved cupcakes and cakes. Quote, we've been looking for 2 or 3 years, trying to find something. It was either too worn or landlords wanted too much rent for too much remodeling, Richard said. This place was really affordable compared to the others because it didn't have a kitchen, Vianney added. Quote, I was the project manager for The Field's Edge, so I did a lot of hands-on and already knew how to do what the city was asking for, Richard explained. It was a blessing that I had those skills right before we got this building, end quote. Everything from the kitchen and additional wall to the built-in seating and lighting, Robert reworked the entire rectangular-shaped place to help make his wife's dreams become a reality. For the last 10 years, Vianney has worked out of her home, creating custom cupcakes and cakes for a dedicated customer base. Quote, it started off as a hobby, but we always wanted to own a business of some type. I worked at Walmart in the bakery for about a year or two, learning how to do stuff. Then I started watching YouTube for skills I didn't have, Vianney admitted. Now, the husband-wife duo bring the Tall City a dessert destination unlike any other. Beyond the delicious bites, three large booths, a wall booth paired with tables and chairs, and a few tables make up the restaurant's in-house options. A greenery wall with white and pink hanging flowers provides a space for standing photo ops, while a pink wall decorated with large sprinkles make up another. Board games are available for guests to play, and family-friendly music plays throughout the building, especially on Friendly Fridays. Quote, I just enjoy being able to give people something that they'll enjoy to eat, Vianney said. She also hopes to get involved in the community as well. Vianney said flavors will also change through the seasons and as more ideas pop in her head. As for cakes, Vianney can make a cake using any available cupcake flavors with a 2 to 3 day notice. As for specialty cakes, such as special flavors, shapes, or themes, a 2 to 3 week notice is required. Prices depend on specifications. Canned soft drinks, bottled Starbucks coffee, water, and fresh coffee are available for purchase as well. Love at First Bite operates 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Thursday and 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. It's located at 4410 North Midkiff Road, Suite A3. Stay up to date at bit.ly/426EEPX. Ranking the 2-Bite Cupcakes. Love at First Bite offers a variety of 2-Bite Cupcakes for $3.50 in-store. With exciting and unique flavors, each mini-cake offers a flavor profile unlike anything before. Right now, guests can choose from coffee, Oreo, PB&J, which would be a lunch substitute with how exactly it tastes, carrot, strawberry crunch, which tastes just like a cheesecake, banana pudding, and my personal favorite, cinnamon toast crunch. If I had to rank them, cinnamon toast crunch, banana pudding, carrot, coffee, Oreo, strawberry crunch, PB&J. Note, I did not dislike any flavors. This is my personal opinion after eating all 7 in one sitting. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 25th. Tommy Lee Doolin was born in Kermit, Texas, to Joe and Ozelia Doolin on October 12, 1947. He passed away on January 9th. He worked as a senior drilling superintendent for Exxon. He retired in 2002 after working 25 years there. Tommy is survived by his wife, Connie, daughter Lisa Murphy, and her husband, Brian, daughter Robin Massey and husband Billy, son Tommy Doolin and his wife Memory, 15 grandchildren, 7 great-grandchildren. He is also survived by sisters-in-law Diane Doolin and Pam Rhodes. Tommy is preceded in death by his daughter Tracy Doolin, his parents Joe and Ozalia Doolin, his brothers Bill, Fred, Harold Doolin, and sister Virginia Reynolds. A graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. at Johnson's Lawn Haven Memorial Gardens in San Angelo, Texas, on Monday, January 29th. Cremation arrangements were under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Maria E. Rodriguez passed away at her daughter's home in Cloudcroft, New Mexico, on January 20th, surrounded by her children. Maria Elfida was 94. She was born in Colorado City on May 4th, 1929, to Jesus and Nicolasa Vila. Shortly after her birth, the family moved to San Carlos, Mexico, where she was raised. She was a homemaker for many years and worked the cotton fields with her sons. She then worked at different cleaners and was part owner of Town and Country Cleaners. Maria is survived by her 8 children, Lupi Bernal from Cloudcroft, New Mexico, Alcario Rodriguez from Midland, Fred Rodriguez from Midland, P.J. Sanchez from Midland, Blas Rodriguez from Midland, Ramon Rodriguez from Odessa, Ralph Rodriguez from Midland, and Monica Rodriguez from Midland. She is also survived by 21 grandchildren, 40 great-grandchildren, and 2 great-great-grandchildren. Visitation will be Thursday, the 25th, from 9 to 5 at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home at 2508 North Big Spring. Rosary will be Thursday, January 25th at 7 p.m. at San Miguel Archangel at 1100 Camp Street. A celebration of Maria Elfida's life will be held at 10 o'clock on Friday, the 26th, at San Miguel Archangel. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Funeral Mass has been entrusted to Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. W. Dean Porter, age 99, of Midland, passed away on January 12th in Pampa, Texas. Graveside services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 27th, at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery in Midland, with Pastor Rick Holloman, pastor of Cotton Flat Baptist Church in Midland, officiating. Arrangements are under the direction of Carmichael Watley Funeral Directors and Crematory of Pampa. The family will receive friends at the funeral home on Thursday, January 25th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. W. Dean Porter was born on May 2, 1924, in Farwell, Texas, to Fred and Ethel Porter. Dean attended schools in Clovis, New Mexico. He served in the Army Air Corps during World War II, where he served as a flight engineer. Dean was employed by Folgers Coffee Company and moved his family to Odessa, Texas, where he serviced the West Texas area. After retiring from Procter & Gamble, he moved to Midland, where he began selling trucks at Sewell Motor Company. Dean married Loretta Cherry Farmer Black in 1978. Dean was preceded in death by his parents, by 2 brothers, Rusty and Sam Porter, his sister, Carol White, wife, Jerry Porter, and son, Dempsey Jack Porter. Survivors include a son, Lee Porter, and his wife, Janice, grandsons, Chris Porter and wife, Angela, and Gavin Porter and wife, Kelly. Granddaughter, Jai Jai Porter Deal, and husband, Jerry, as well as great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be sent to Scottish Rite Children's Hospital.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, February 1st. Pfluger votes to impeach Secretary Mayorkas in Homeland Security Committee. Overnight, Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, voted in the House Homeland Security Committee to advance the articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas to the full House of Representatives. In the full committee markup, Representative Pfluger advocated for a secure border and explained his reasoning behind voting to impeach Secretary Mayorkas. Representative August Pfluger: Secretary Mayorkas has willfully and systematically refused to comply with the law, adhere to congressional directives, and secure the homeland, leading to the worst border crisis in history. It is a sad day when Congress is left with no option but to impeach a cabinet secretary. But there must be consequences for the secretary's refusal to protect the safety of American citizens. It is a sad day that we are here. I take no pleasure in the significance of this effort. I have wrestled with the appropriate constitutional response to what has been a willful refusal to comply with the law, to adhere to congressional directives, and to secure the homeland. The failure to secure the border has been so significant, so catastrophic, that Congress must use its power to provide accountability. We must be the check and the balance against such an extreme, egregious breach of the public trust. Families around the country have lost faith in the public trust we once expected Secretary Mayorkas to uphold. The Tambonga family from my district lost 71-year-old Maria and her 7-year-old granddaughter Amelia in a car crash and know the horror that has come from an open border. Last year, during a high-speed chase, a human trafficker smuggled 11 illegal aliens, crashed into Maria and Amelia, and changed the Tambonga family forever. I'm here today to see Secretary Mayorkas held accountable for creating a detrimental domino effect that took Amelia and Maria from them. For Maria and Amelia's sake, if not this effort, then what? What is the appropriate congressional check on this secretary's gross negligence? The answer from the other side simply cannot be, "We are powerless." I ask rhetorically for the other side. If not this effort, then how do we hold this failure to account? So we offer these articles of impeachment here today. Willful and systematic refusal to comply with the law. Breach of public trust. The charges in these articles are serious and thoughtful and readily provable. An impeachable offense need not be an indictable offense. In fact, the Constitution came along before the existing criminal laws and penal code. An impeachable offense is what the Congress believes to be serious offenses against the public trust. The other side will say this is simply policy differences. No, this is not a policy difference. This is not a debate about whether taxes are too high or too low, or should we support one government program or another. This is a question of national sovereignty. Whether this nation is sovereign or not is not a policy question. It's a constitutional one. Today is about Secretary Mayorkas' willful refusal to comply with the law and his breach of the public trust. Just months ago, FBI Director Christopher Wray sat in front of this very committee next to Secretary Mayorkas, Director Ray confirmed that of the 300 individuals whose name matched the terrorist watch list, there are still people on the list at large. Secretary Mayorkas, sitting just feet away from Director Ray, could not affirm the fact or answer the question. Known or suspected terrorists should immediately be detained or deported, but instead, under the watch of Secretary Mayorkas, there are some running free in our communities. It is that type of behavior that brings us here today and puts the American people and our democracy at risk. Set aside the personalities for a moment. Is it the belief on the other side of the aisle that there is simply nothing we can do, that the sitting secretary has the authority to allow 10 million people to just walk into the country in direct contradiction to the laws enacted by Congress? This is an extreme position. This is anti-sovereignty. That is an affront to the Constitution. The secretary's willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law, and certainly a breach of public trust. The subcommittee or counterterrorism law enforcement and intelligence, which I chair, uncovered the scandal of known and suspected terrorists crossing the southern border and the numbers for a time being hidden. Failing to prevent malign actors from entering the country and failing to enforce the law is not a policy difference. If it is, what is the inverse position? Being in favor of SKSTs entering our country? I think we weren't here today. I wish we weren't here today. I wish Maria and Amelia were home in Texas today. But we are here doing our work on this solemn and serious occasion. This is a last resort. Ector County Courts busy in January. The Ector County District Attorney's Office convinced jurors to hand down convictions last month for a murder suspect and a suspected child abuser. District Attorney Dusty Gallivan said Christian Escarcina was convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison by jury in the 161st District Court. According to court records, Odessa police received a call about shots being fired at the Agave Bar on East University Boulevard around 1:30 a.m. October 31, 2021. When officers arrived, another officer working off-duty at Stein's Ultra Bar told them he saw two men shoot Jesse Sanchez and flee in a Nissan Altima. Sanchez died at Medical Center Hospital. Officers gave chase, and after 29 minutes, the Nissan was disabled and Escarcina and Martin Monge Hernandez were caught after fleeing the area on foot. According to court documents, officers found an AR-15 style rifle and handgun in the Nissan and spent AR-15 and handgun casings at the scene of the shooting. Escarcina and Hernandez were each indicted January 11, 2022 on a first-degree murder charge. Hernandez is set to go to trial March 25th in the 151st District Court. A jury in the 244th District Court also convicted Jonathan McKissick of injury to a child and sentenced him to 99 years. McKissick was indicted in April 2021 after the Ector County Sheriff's Office accused him of severely beating his girlfriend's 22-month-old son on February 27, 2021. Gallivan said McKissick, who has an extensive criminal history, caused permanent physical damage to the child. The child's mother, Diamond Rocha, pleaded guilty of injury to a child and was given 8 years deferred adjudication Tuesday. McKissick and Escarcina will be eligible for parole in 2054, Gallivan said. More city department heads leave. The city of Odessa lost three more department heads in January, continuing a year-long trend of departures from the upper echelon at City Hall. Merita Sandoval, Community Development Director, notified the city on January 17th she'd be retiring effective Wednesday. She had worked for the city since October 1996. Joanne Samaniego, Purchasing Department Director, turned in her retirement letter the same day and left Wednesday also. She began with the city in August 1984. She thanked Deputy City Manager Agapito Bernal and the whole team for providing her with a wonderful workplace environment. I have no doubts that the Purchasing Department and City of Odessa will keep reaching new heights with such an incredible group of people working together, she wrote. John Scott Anderson also turned in his retirement papers January 17th. In his notice, he thanked City Manager John Beckmeyer for all of the opportunities he was afforded while working for the city. After 35 years of service to the organization and the citizens of Odessa, I feel it is time to move to the next phase of life, Anderson wrote. Anderson said he planned to help with any transition his final 2 weeks. However, he was not given that opportunity. The city of Odessa accepts your resignation, Bernal wrote in a memo to Anderson on January 19th. Per Texas Workforce Commission policy, however, we have elected to terminate your employment at an earlier point within the two-week window without changing the nature of the separation. Bernal told him that day would be his last day, but he'd be paid through February 1st. He also informed him he'd be eligible for rehire since he provided proper notice. Bernal thanked him for his service and wished him the best. Bernal told Beckmeyer he offered Anderson a reception to celebrate his retirement, but Anderson declined. The three departures are just the latest in a string of departures since January 2023. 21 of the city's 38 departments have seen a change at the top since the city council terminated the contracts of city manager Michael Marrero and city attorney Natasha Brooks in December 2022. Some retired, others quit, and a handful were fired. In a late November interview, Beckmeyer said he wasn't concerned so many had left. I actually don't see it as a bad thing, and it's nothing personal or anything degrading or anything other than from the older department heads, Beckmeyer said. Sometimes it's actually a good thing, I believe, to get new eyes looking at situations. I don't look at it as a downside. And I also see the quality of the department heads we have now. While it's true the city lost a lot of experience and institutional knowledge over the last year, Beckmeyer said the depth of experience under most of the department heads is impressive, and that has helped a great deal with the changes. The city has 73 employees who have been employed by the city for at least 20 years. Sol Ross State University ranks among top schools for online master's degrees for second year in a row. Sol Ross State University has been recognized as one of the best schools for online learning at the master's level by OnlineMastersDegrees.org, OMD, for the second straight year. SRSU's programs earn top honors in the following subject areas: Best Online Master's Degree in Homeland Security, Best Online Master's Degree in English, Best Online MPA Degrees, Most Affordable Online Degrees in Criminal Justice, Best Online Master's Degree in Political Science. This recognition comes at a time when enrollment in master's degree programs is on the decline, according to a 2023 report by the Council of Graduate Schools. Enrollment dropped almost 5% from fall 2021 to fall 2022, despite an increase in applications. The same report cites uncertainty in the value of a graduate degree is one of the main reasons for the downturn, with more students questioning whether a master's degree is worth the investment. It is important to highlight the schools offering the best value, Kyle Darland, co-founder of OMD, said in a news release. For the OMD rankings, this started with regionally accredited institutions with the lowest net cost. This includes tuition and fees, but also looks at the amount of institutional aid their grad students receive. Overall cost is a major factor in most enrollment decisions. Their rankings also consider value as it pertains to flexibility. Many master's students need to balance work, family, and other responsibilities, making online learning a must-have option for colleges. Each ranked school offers at least one partially or fully online master's program, and many have dozens across a wide range of subjects, Darlin said. Online programs make earning a master's far more convenient and may encourage people on the fence about enrolling to take the first step. SRSU has 25 online master's programs. OMD analyzed more than 7,700 accredited colleges and universities using data from the Integrated Post-Secondary Education Data System, IPEDS, and the institutions themselves. After the data was compiled, OMD's data science team then applied a proprietary algorithm to rank all qualifying schools for each of the different master's degree specialties. Primary data points include graduate student tuition, number of online programs, number of graduate students in online courses, student-to-faculty ratio, graduate student acceptance rate, academic counseling services, career placement services. To be eligible, a college or university must hold active regional accreditation and have at least one partially online master's program in the ranking subject. Just 9% of U.S. post-secondary institutions earned a ranking position, the release said. Global energy disrupted by Mideast tensions. Edwards Perryman say, Iran courts trouble with provocations. What Iran is up to in the Middle East, backing terrorists and provoking Israel and the United States, is hard to decipher, but it doesn't bode well for the global energy industry. Odessa oilman Kirk Edwards and Waco economist Ray Perryman say supporting Hamas in its war against Israel in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and the Houthis in their drone and missile attacks on shipping in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden from their power base in Yemen makes Iran the focal point of Israeli and American ire. I clearly can't understand why Iran is trying to be such a bad actor in the Middle East right now, Edwards said Wednesday. It reminds me of the Saddam Hussein days in Iraq, when he was doing the same sort of escapades that Iran is now orchestrating, backing Hamas against Israel, and now the Houthi rebels against the U.S. is not going to end well for Iran. The killing of the three U.S. servicemen by Iranian-made weapons will undoubtedly cause a major reprisal against Iran by the U.S. Edwards said going after Iran's crude oil exports in a big way would hurt them the quickest and would have long-lasting effects. Either Iran does not think the Biden administration will stand up to them, or they are somehow trying to draw the U.S. even more into the Middle East conflicts, he said. It will be very interesting over the next week to see how the U.S. reacts. We should, but who knows if the administration will. That has not been their standard operating procedure so far. Either way, oil prices are going to be dramatically swayed if Iran's export capacities are damaged, and in a big way. Perryman said there are clear signs that much of the current turmoil in the Middle East is ultimately driven by or escalated by the actions of Iran. Tensions between the U.S. and Iran go back decades and, as an aside, the conflicts back in the late 1970s were among the first matters that got me significantly involved in global economic policy, Perryman said Wednesday. Some of the recent actions seem to be designed to ratchet up the heat in the region. He said Middle Eastern energy markets are always affected by a major escalation in tensions. The region's economy is almost entirely dependent on petroleum production and exports, Perryman said. Thus, any type of disruption can't help but affect energy markets. Moreover, producers in the region will inevitably take sides. Shipping will be disrupted and other problems will arise, which will work to disrupt the proper functioning of the global oil chain, the oil supply chain. He said domestic events in Iran almost certainly have some effect on the nation's decisions to continue to provoke the U.S. and other nations, but the roots of the problem have been around for decades. Although cooler heads will likely ultimately prevail, if continued movement or perceived movement toward direct conflict persists, uncertainty will undoubtedly increase and energy markets will respond accordingly, Perryman said. The long-term investment climate in the region will also suffer. It's difficult to assess what Iran hopes to achieve by provoking the U.S. military, but it is clear that one objective is to increase the risk associated with the U.S. role in the Middle East, and in particular with regard to Israel and Gaza. Obviously, if the conflict worsens, the energy markets will respond and potentially disrupt the economic balance of the region. Easy Rider bus system shows growth in Midland in December. The number of passengers using the Easy Rider bus system in Midland in December easily topped year-over-year numbers and easily surpassed the number of riders in Odessa. The Midland-Odessa Urban Transit District reported that 9,995 passengers used fixed route operations in Midland during the month of December. That was a 15.89% increase compared to December 2022 and a 14.39% increase compared to 8,737 passengers that used the bus system in Odessa. That total does not include the 1,328 passengers that use the paratransit system in Midland. In Odessa, that total was 839. The Midland-Odessa Urban Transit District also reported 113,222 fixed-route passengers in Midland during the entire 2023 calendar year. That number does not include 18,756 paratransit passengers. There were 99,799 fixed route passengers in Odessa in 2023. Easy Rider passenger numbers. In 2023, fixed route passengers, Midland, 113,222. Odessa, 99,799. In December, Midland, 9,995. Odessa, 8,737. Paratransit, Midland, 1,328. Odessa, 839. Mexican national sentence for trafficking cocaine into U.S. from Mexico. A Mexican national has been sentenced in a federal court in Pecos for 41 months in prison for cocaine trafficking. According to court documents, Ana Cristina Alarcón Rios, 24, of Chihuahua, was stopped for speeding along Highway 90 in Alpine by a Brewster County Sheriff's deputy. A canine searched her vehicle, revealing 10 bundles containing 11.1 kilograms of cocaine destined for Denver, Colorado. Rios pleaded guilty on August 25, 2023, to possession with intent to distribute cocaine. This sentence serves as a warning to anyone who would consider trafficking illicit drugs into the U.S. U.S. Attorney Jaime Esparza for the Western District of Texas said in a news release, Thanks to our partners at the local and federal levels, these offenders run a high risk of being apprehended and prosecuted for their crimes. HSI and the Brewster County Sheriff's Department investigated the case. Assistant U.S. Attorneys Scott Greenbaum and Dustin Farrocknack prosecuted the case. Rescue runners to pay tribute to Corrales. The City of Midland Animal Services Department will dedicate a special rescue runners, which will take place at 8 a.m. on February 3rd at Midland Animal Services, located at 1200 North Fairgrounds Road. The event will pay tribute to Dan Corrales, the at-large city councilman who passed away this week. Corrales served as the city council liaison for the Animal Services Advisory Commission. Rescue Runners is a volunteer program designed to recruit people to help walk or run shelter dogs. The shelter environment can be a stressful place, so getting the dogs out for exercise provides enrichment and allows for improvement in social skills. The outing allows for dogs to showcase their personality outside of the kennel, helping to promote fostering and adoption. Rescue Runners typically take place on the first and third Saturdays of the month. Hearing canceled in baby death case. The change of plea hearing for a 19-year-old Odessa woman charged in connection with the 2022 death of her 7-month-old son was canceled Wednesday. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan declined to say why Layla Pearson's hearing was canceled. He said no new date has been set. Pearson and Cameron Gamage were arrested in July 2022 after they called 911 about an unresponsive baby, and officers found their 7-month-old son Logan dead, his head covered in bruises. An autopsy revealed the child had also been strangled. Gamage, then 24, pleaded guilty to murder and injury to a child before he was even arraigned on the charges and was sentenced to life in prison plus 20 years. Pearson was indicted on 2 counts of injury to a child, a first-degree felony punishable by 5 years to life in prison. She was released from the Ector County Jail December 21, 2022, after posting surety bonds totaling $200,000. However, her bond was revoked in May 2023 when the bail bond company informed the judge they couldn't verify her address. She's now being held without bond. Man facing criminal negligent homicide charge. An Odessa man has been arrested in connection with last week's death of a pedestrian on East 8th Street. According to the City of Odessa, police were notified of a vehicle pedestrian accident near 8th Street and Letty Lee around 7:30 p.m. January 24th. Officers determined Bresia Page was trying to cross the roadway outside of a crosswalk when a Chevrolet Silverado being driven by Jose Armando Gonzalez, 25, struck her. Page was pronounced dead at the scene. According to an Odessa Police Department report, investigators used video surveillance to determine Gonzalez was traveling 59 miles an hour at the time of the crash, and crash data from the Chevy indicated he was going 58 miles per hour. The report stated the speed limit in that area is 35 miles per hour. Investigators also determined Gonzalez didn't have a driver's license or insurance. Gonzalez was booked into the Ector County Jail Tuesday on suspicion of criminal negligent homicide. Gonzalez remained in custody Wednesday night on a $15,000 surety bond. Couple arrested in connection with carjacking. An Odessa couple was arrested early Wednesday morning following a carjacking incident on West County Road. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 20-year-old man called 911 around 11:30 p.m. Tuesday to report his GMC K1500 had been stolen at gunpoint from the 2700 block of Northwest County Road. When officers arrived, the man explained he'd been in the parking lot of First Basin Credit Union Auto talking to his girlfriend when a Ford F-150 with four people pulled up in front of his truck. The report stated, the alleged victim had a bald and tattooed man got out of the Ford and told him to get out while holding a shotgun. When he didn't comply, the man said the bald man fired the shotgun into the air, at which point he and his girlfriend, 20, jumped out. According to the report, the man said a passenger in the Ford then jumped into the driver's side of the Ford. The drivers of the Ford and the GMC then took off. Both vehicles were found in the 2600 block of Beatty Avenue, and police made contact with Isaac Carrasco, 28, and Taylor Woods, 33, according to the report. The man and his girlfriend both identified Carrasco as the gunman, and he was arrested on suspicion of aggravated robbery and discharging a firearm in certain municipalities. The keys to the Ford were found in Woods' purse, and she, too, was arrested on suspicion of aggravated robbery. Carrasco remained in the Ector County Jail Wednesday night on surety bonds totaling $152,000. Woods also remained in custody on a $50,000 surety bond. Obituaries, Midland. No services have been scheduled. Lee Riston, 66, of Midland, died Thursday, January 23rd, in Midland. Gloria V. Waite, 78, of Midland, died Friday, January 26th, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. January 18th at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland. Jackie Voglino Barner. Jackie Barner Voglino, 97, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 27th, in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m., February 23rd, at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Thomas Wilson Stanley, 72, of Odessa, died Sunday, January 28th, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 4 p.m., February 3rd, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Tommy Ray Shadwick, Sr., 63, of Odessa, died Tuesday, January 23rd, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m., January 21st, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Mike Bartlett is officiating. Obituaries, Lisa Ann LaRue. No service had been scheduled. Lisa Ann LaRue, 64, of Midland, died Thursday, January 25th, in Midland. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Sarah Joan Hines, 84, died Monday, January 29th, in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Tina Jean Coe. No services have been scheduled. Tina Jean Coe, 55, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 24th, in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Kayla Deanne Brady Durden. Kayla Deanne Brady, age 56, passed away on January 21st in Odessa. Memorial services are pending and will be posted on Kayla's Facebook page. All family and friends who wish to attend her life celebration are welcome. Contribution to Kayla's memory can be made to the charity of your choice. Marilyn June Main, 74, of Odessa, passed away on Sunday, January 28th. Marilyn was born June 15th, 1949. Services to be conducted by Reverend Don and Joe Weeks are scheduled for Saturday, February 3rd at 11 a.m. at Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane, Odessa. Wendell J. Kimbrough, Sr., 80, of Odessa, passed away on Monday, January 29th. A visitation for Wendell will be held Thursday, February 1st at 11:30 a.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, 601 North Allegheny Avenue, Odessa, Texas.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.